Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are. Welcome to Gatecast. This is a new podcast. We'll be doing detailed breakdowns of all the Stargate SG-1 episodes. Now, I realize that there isn't a podcast for Stargate at present, because mostly because people tell me on Gate World that everything but Season 4 on has full-length audio commentaries. That still means we can keep going for about 3 years. I've also my name's Alan. You might know me from Phasecast and occasional voicemails on Sci-Fi Dig and assorted other podcasts that I listen to. I'd also like to introduce you to my co-host, Scott. Scott?
Yeah, I'm Scott. You may recognize me as Scott from Tucson on various Farpoint Media podcasts, as well as Aaron's forum guy on Sci-Fi Dig. And, well, actually, that's about the only other places I've really been anywhere online, other than my own websites.
Yeah, Scott does have a... Let's drop in a flagrant plug here for Scott's templates for all websites. Free templates. Good templates. Yeah. Go use. now that we've finished broadcasting, I'm not actually selling anything. We will have... if you're listening to this, if you've gone through iTunes, you should see a link to www.gatecast.co.cc. That does sublink back to my own domain, phasecast.com, but you don't necessarily want to listen to that. What we're going to do in this is episode zero, and each episode will be numbered for your own convenience in accordance with the number of the season episodes. So in this, our sort of pilot episode, which is 0.1.0, we're going to be covering the original Stargate movie with Kurt Russell, James Spader, and Scott, help me out here.
Let me grab my DVD box.
Yeah.
Doesn't really help.
Well, it's basically Kurt Russell and James Spader. A lot of the actors were reused in the TV series, but we'll be focusing on differences between the movie and the TV series in episode one. This is effectively episode zero. That was, I presume, Scott casually and carefully tossing the DVD box onto the floor.
No, I just dropped it on my lap, actually. I wasn't...
Your lap is made of plastic?
No, it bounced off my lap and hit the desk.
Yeah.
But you can go ahead and edit all that out.
No. We're going out raw.
Oh, sure. Anyway.
Unless I swear profusely, in which case I probably will edit. And please, Scott, don't start swearing purely from a... trying to get me to get some extra work in standpoint. Scott is kindly setting up the website as well. As I said, it'll be www.gatecast.co.cc, but that should be linked through the RSS feed if you got this from iTunes. We'll have favicons and so on. I suppose I'll open by trying to get us additional listeners. You might notice we don't have any intro music or outro music. So what I've proposed, and will be funding myself, is a competition. Submit intro music to us. You can send email to gatecast@gmail.com, which isn't actually set up at the moment, but will be by the time this podcast uploads. And, I mean, preferably in MP3 format, ideally, say not larger than, I would say, about 2 or 3 meg, and we're looking for something in the vicinity of between 30 and 60 seconds, preferably with flavor of Stargate, would you say, Scott?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Maybe use... I'm not really sure what the legalities are, but maybe possibly take one of the themes from Stargate and kind of remix it and make it a little bit better.
Well, you could do... I mean, a not bad sample of theme music, which we quite like for intro, is the one that they use on the Scapecast, which is basically, it's a series of little... it's the music in the background, but there's little audio clips from the show mixed in.
That could
work,
yeah.
Surprise us, by all means. And we'll review, and we'll trim it down to about, I would say, 4 or 5, and then we'll feature those in maybe episode 2 or 3, depending on how long this runs for. And what we're going to do then is, once we select the winner... if you're interested, you can get a copy of either The Arc of Truth, or if you have The Arc of Truth and you're prepared to wait until July, we can send you Continuum instead. because I don't think anyone has continuum at this point. In fact, let's make a continuum for the sake of it, because it's the one thing we guarantee we will be uploaded and we'll be several episodes in by the time continuum comes out. Mm-hmm. Would you be happy with that, Scott?
Sounds about right. And I also just set up a voicemail number for us.
Oh, cool. Give out the voice now.
It is 206-426-6882.
Anyone not listening in the US is going to have to put 001 before that. Okay. Coming back in, thank you for sending the voicemail, Scott. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, we don't actually know at this point. What I'd like to try and do is see if we can actually get anyone associated with the show. If you are associated with the show and you're hearing this and you'd like to contribute, by all means, we use Gizmo, so we can... if you give us a number, we can call. If you'd like to set up an interview or something, we will be covering, in addition to detailed breakdowns, we will be covering stuff like upcoming news, we're also going to, I think, try a Where Are They Now feature, especially as we get into later seasons, people who've left the actual Stargate and see what they're doing now. They might be actually easier to get the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the other thing. In terms of spoiler level, yep. You will hear that noise if we're going to give a spoiler, but generally, unless we're actually talking about current news, spoiler level will be kept to the episode that we're currently discussing. So if you're listening to, say, 1.03 and you've only seen three episodes of Stargate, which is as most possible, there are people out there who haven't seen Farscape after all. Yes, I am a fan of Farscape. I know that's about the fourth time I've mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to try and keep spoiler levels to the current episode. So, for example, we're going to be breaking down the movie now. We will be hopping backwards and forwards. I'm going to try and keep it reasonably coherent, but I'll see where it goes.
Yeah, we won't be telling you, for example, if we're on episode 1, we're not going to say, oh, in episode 10, we're not going to jump ahead and tell you what goes on, because that way, if you're not there yet, you won't get that angry at us.
Yes, we'll see how angry MGM gets at us. Yes, hang on. Oh, Stargate trademarks are copyright MGM, 1990-something. And any and all uses have not been approved by MGM, and this is in no way official or linked to MGM in any way, shape, or form. I think that more or less covers it.
Yeah. You probably should record that and just throw it at the end of every episode.
I can edit it and sort of drop it. This episode, folks, by the way, it got a little vague. It's our first episode, so we're sort of slightly scattergun. We will settle more.
We're also experimenting a bit. And we try to figure out where the best way to do things and all the fun stuff that comes with starting a brand new show.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you said, Scott, I've been doing this a little longer. Admittedly, my own podcast fizzled out somewhat. In fact, I have interviews recorded with a couple of major authors that I haven't dropped in because I haven't thought about enough to actually talk around them. Coming back to the movie, let's try and get this thing, if not on track, then at least pointing in the general direction of what we're supposed to be talking about. Our movie opens in Giza in, I believe, somewhere in the vicinity of 1923?
Yes. Somewhere around there.
Somewhere in the 1920s, and we see a young Dr. Langford?
Yeah.
Yeah, along with her father. She picks up an amulet, which turns out to have the symbol of Ra on it.
Yes, the Eye of Ra.
Which will become important later on in the movie. But what the movie opens with is the uncovering of the cover stones and the actual... We see there's a large scene with... bear in mind that this is 1923, with sort of ropes and... Tens of people, if not on, yeah, definitely tens of people, lifting the Stargate up out of the sand. It's quite a sort of startling image, but this being a podcast, you're not going to actually see that.
Yeah, and I can actually tell you a couple of behind-the-scenes things about it. The Stargate was originally black, but it didn't come out. It didn't look right. So right before they actually started filming, they actually went and painted it the gray that it is now.
But it looks black on screen, doesn't it?
Well, apparently it was even blacker than that, I guess.
I don't know. I'm not yes to the, yes, we're having our first tiff. Wonderful. The joys of collaborative podcasting.
Yep.
I must say, and this is again, I'll tack this on the show notes, but this podcast and this recording brought to you thanks primarily to Gizmo. Because we've tried other, shall we say, green tick-shaped voiceover IP clients with recording, and it didn't work out so well.
Yeah,
Gizmo has integrated recording, and we can do dial-out too.
Well, and also another feature that we have that is actually kind of interesting, it actually has kind of what can be considered a soundboard. Okay, I just had to throw a sound effect in there, just because.
Yes, you did, and that sound effect for the three people on the planet who haven't actually seen a Stargate episode is the gate activating, and you see the unstable wormhole bouncing out. And so it flashes forward. It's actually quite lethal, but that's strangely enough, it's an interesting point. It's something I'm going to pick up on. They hadn't actually managed to open the gate. It's something I'd like to discuss. When they do actually get the gate open, they don't know the unstable wormhole is going to jump out to that extent. Why was nobody standing on the ramp?
Good point.
I mean, how did they know that there would be an unstable wormhole which could potentially kill people or erase things? Why was there nothing in the way?
Okay, so you found a plot hole.
Yes, I found the plot hole.
Well, you'd think they would
plot holes is fun.
Well, you'd think they'd at least have one of the probes just sitting right there ready to to go through, and then it gets taken out and, you know.
No, it's possible. I don't have my... Let's just say my version of the movie is one I recorded off the TV.
Yeah, and the one I have is the Ultimate Edition that's only on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, it was 1928.
I was close. You gonna argue with me about 5 years in a movie I watched while half cut? Yes, folks, I'm afraid drinking may be mentioned in this podcast on occasion. And depending on what time we're recording, may actually happen during the podcast.
Yeah, he's from Ireland, so it's kind of required.
I'm actually supposed to be off at the minute. Be that as it may. But they do actually open the podcast. Oh, podcast? Oh, dear.
You can go ahead and
edit. Yes, like I said, raw and rough and ready. I assure you, we will sound more professional as the years roll on. Even if I'm not actually living in Ireland any longer.
Yeah, maybe you come to a sane country or something.
No, actually worse, I'm going to Scotland.
Oh, okay. Well,
which, if anything, has a worse reputation for alcohol consumption than we do.
Well, I wasn't hinting that you were going to be coming over here, which, you know, would probably be a good thing.
No, let's avoid the political commentary until we've got at least 20 casts under our belt. Okay, we can do off-topic casts. Moving vaguely back on topic, after they open the Stargate, they step through into what appears to be a fairly dark pyramid, but they come out and you've got this sort of, I suppose, desert.
Mm-hmm. Which, incidentally, all of the desert scenes that are in the movie were actually filmed here in Arizona, in Yuma.
Hmm. Just, I have no idea where Yuma is.
It's middle of Arizona. It's about 100 and so miles away from here.
It's the non-radioactive bit, then.
Well, it's hot enough, it probably would melt you just the same. It's actually hotter there than it is here. I remember on one of the commentaries, they said something about it was 123 in the shade while they were doing it.
Well, you do actually see, that's something else you'll note. When they actually step through the Stargate, when they come out the other side, they're sort of covered in frost.
I never noticed that.
It's noticeable at the risk of jumping ahead very slightly. It's noticeable in the first episode of the series as well.
See, now I'm going to have to watch.
Well, you're going to have to watch anyway, dude. We need to do research.
Oh, I actually put the DVD on right now, and I'm actually kind of looking at it.
Scott, this is not helping. There's actually, in fairness, we jumped forward a good... They don't even get the Stargate open until about, like, 20 minutes in.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at it.
Yes, there is, of course, jumping back, and we will be jumping backwards and forwards mostly as stuff randomly occurs to me.
Yeah, that's how the brain works.
Works? You're assuming my brain actually works. After we've seen the scene with the Stargate being lifted in Giza, we see Dr. Jackson, played by James Spader, trying to give a lecture about the fact that the pyramids could not have been built with the technology that they had available at the time. And he's sort of speculating. He doesn't actually say, strangely enough, and it's something that's mentioned in the series, but this isn't spoilery. There's an implication given that they retcon a bit, I suppose. There's an implication given that he does actually say that the pyramids were used as landing platforms for alien spaceships. Which, of course, as we see about, 45, 50 minutes in, that is the case.
And what what I think is kind of funny during that little lecture that he's giving, he said, "So and so did not actually build the pyramids," and some heckler in the audience says, "Who do you think built them? Men from Atlantis or Martians, maybe?"
We haven't actually seen Martians mentioned anywhere in Stargate, and the Atlantis thing, I don't think pops up till about season 5.
Yeah, but they don't actually go there until, season 8?
9, I think. I don't think we actually go to Atlantis until we get... It wasn't Jack.
Yeah. Well, you may want to cut that out, since we kind of give a spoiler from several seasons in.
I'll see. Yeah, that kind of thing. I'm just looking, and we're coming into... Yeah, Dr. Jackson hasn't actually arrived at Stargate Command. And Stargate Command is, according to the movie anyway, at a place called Creek Mountain.
And do they even say what state or city? Or near what city?
Is it supposed to... Is Stargate Command actually near you, Scott?
No. It's... In the TV series, it's supposed to be in, I think, Colorado or something.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, I don't think they ever said...
Well, I'm looking at the movie, and I'm leaving this bit in, by the way. We're looking at, yes, as you can see, we are expertly prepared. I have actually watched the movie.
Yes, I've watched it about 20 times. It's just...
No, I've watched
it like 3 times recently, but I never took any notes. I probably should have.
This is episode 0. This is where we work out the kinks. Consider it... Yeah, that's why it's called a pilot.
Yeah, I know. That way we know if we're renewed for the first season.
Yeah, I think we might need an explicit tag on episode 1.
Or you can bleep.
At the moment, I'm looking at a scene of Kurt Russell holding a gun.
That's actually right where I am.
Kurt Russell's young son shot himself. It's not actually mentioned that it was Colonel O'Neill, and this is Colonel O'Neill. Kurt Russell is playing Colonel O'Neill. Colonel O'Neill and this, I don't think this is part, I think it's something that should come up. Colonel O'Neill and, no, hang on. No, it does. It says Creek Mountain, Colorado.
Okay.
And it's the same scene outside.
Creek Mountain. So it is Colorado, though.
And I'm looking at the actual interesting point. This is a recurrence. This is a guy who appears as a different character in the TV series. The guy, I've spun forward to 29 minutes in where they're actually entering the Stargate. And the room isn't lit. The room is only lit, I presume it's purely for effect purposes. But the room is only lit by the actual wormhole surface itself, which I believe has been described as a pool of standing water.
Yeah, that sounds... Let's see. You're way ahead of where I am.
The advantages of using VLC to watch it as an AVI is I can spin backwards and forwards at will. Now, there's the thing. James Spader closes his eyes as he steps through. If there's one thing I would not do there is close my eyes.
Well, he opens them as he's inside.
No, he doesn't. They're still closed. I've just watched it.
On mine, he puts his head in and then opens his eyes and then he goes flying.
Hang on. Let me just say,
he opens them right before he dematerializes.
Yes, I'm not so much breaking it down as picking it apart.
Hey, that's what geeks do.
James Spader is sticking his hands in. I mean, like, we could, I suppose, break down the actual movie and tell you what happens, but, I mean, let's face it, you know what happens. You've seen the movie, you know?
I can
break the movie down for you in basically 5 minutes. It's a Kurt Russell movie.
The movie's 14 years old. You've seen it.
If you haven't seen it, go buy it. Actually, I wonder, does the Stargate Ultimate Collector's Edition... Now, his eyes are closed. He's stepping through the gate in slow motion. His eyes are still closed. Okay, they're open. Fair enough. I stand corrected.
See?
I don't know if you guys can hear the Stargate noise in the background. I didn't bother to lower it.
What about the Ultimate Edition? You asked.
Does the Ultimate Edition have a different Stargate sequence?
No. All this has is just extended. All it is just an extended cut. It's got
scenes. A longer Stargate sequence.
No, it's about the same distance. Length.
Oh, that's another thing. They say in the movie, and this will come up again when we're talking about the lighting flares. This will come up again when we're discussing the Children of the Gods. And a lot of the Children of the Gods breakdown, to be honest with you, is going to be differences between the TV series and the movie, aside from obvious budgetary ones. Something I will say here is they use the same gate.
Mm-hmm.
They really only have, according to an episode of commentary I listened to in season 4, they have two gates. They have the one that they use sort of in the main SG-1 set, and they have the one that they sort of take for outside location filming.
I never heard that, but then again, I only own the first season on DVD at the moment.
Yes. Scott has an Amazon wish list. There'll be a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, there you go.
Am I embarrassing you, Scott?
No.
Flagrant plug. I don't have a wish list. I don't really have anything in all honesty, folks, I have more DVDs than I have time to watch. So don't worry about me. Okay, I mean, fundamentally in the movie, the planet, you're saying, because in the version I'm watching, they've just come out of the pyramid into the bright sunlight, and that was, they built that?
As far as I know, they did.
I'm assuming it's just, I mean, the actual shot where you see people walking out and just the entrance, you know, the entrance gateway.
Yeah.
The entryway. I'm assuming that is probably cardboard or backing. The long shot, I would say, is probably a matte painting.
Well, and maybe a green screen and...
Green screen. Although it doesn't look like green screen. You can generally tell if it's green screen.
Who knows? Maybe they went to Egypt for just one scene. I don't think they did, but...
Might be cheaper to go to Egypt than to, build this whole thing. Yeah, because Kurt Russell looks hot there. As in, overly warm. I am not declaring any... or way, shape, or form of desire for Kurt Russell.
Are you sure about that?
I'm positive. Amanda Tapping, though? Claudia Black in later seasons, but certainly not Kurt Russell. But, I mean, the movie, as I said, the movie can be fundamentally wrapped up in they arrive on the planet, they meet the natives, they get friendly with natives, and here we have another nitpick that a friend of mine had, and he said it kind of took him out of the movie. He can't understand the language. Oh, actually, this is a relevant plot point. Jackson fundamentally made an assumption. An assumption is the mother of all screw-ups. Jackson assumed that there'd be a stone with the point of origin on it when they arrived, because again, this is a fundamental thing of the Stargate. You have and Jackson does actually explain it in the movie, and it's actually explained quite well, even for sort of non-geeks, which is basically...
I think he explained it pretty well for being an archaeologist and not, you know...
not an astrophysicist?
Well, I was thinking a scientist, but yeah. Well, then again, if you want to think about it, archaeologists are scientists.
Oh, dear. I think you've just alienated the entire archaeology community. I'm definitely leaving that in.
No.
Just to see what sort of emails we get.
You just want to get me in trouble.
Hey, look, it's not an evil level of trouble.
Yeah. Washed eyes.
Okay. you see, this is why it's so much easier to do a podcast with somebody else. Sitting in a room and just speaking personally, and kudos to Aaron, but sitting in a room on your own and blathering away for an hour, even for me, and I talk a lot, is hard. Whereas basically, we just sit here, the movie's playing in the background, we're vaguely on topic about 10% of the time. I assure you, folks, it'll get better as we sort of get into the swing of things. This is just the first time we've done this, so we're sort of faffing about somewhat.
Yeah, he's more experienced than I am. I am more experienced in listening to podcasts.
Listening to podcasts is a passive thing. You need to participate. You need to interrupt me, too, or shut me up occasionally. I'll just blather on for half the day. Although, to be precise, I'll be blathering on for another 35 minutes or so, and then my friend with a van is arriving.
A van, huh?
Sorry? Yeah,
I
just happen to drive a van. I'm gonna get him to fix my bloody...
You know that buffalo-looking thing that's in... That's,
yeah.
That's actually
that
a horse.
That's a horse?
Yes. It's actually a redress horse.
Cool. It reminds me of a...
With a prosthetic.
There's no point in bringing the Simpsons episode in. Actually, in fairness, no. That'd be irrelevant to the series. Sorry, things are occurring to me. Yes, the soldiers, and the scene I'm watching, the soldiers are quite annoyed at the fact that Jackson can't get them home.
I've already seen the animal.
Oh, you're a bit further forward. You spun forward further than I did. Yes, there's the animal. And we see the natives.
Oh, you're ahead of me now.
So one could say the natives are, I'm just past, there's a scene... Jackson, sorry folks, if we've lost you completely and we seem to be just nattering amongst ourselves. But there's a scene in which Daniel gets dragged away by this apparently redressed horse.
Yeah. They mention it in the commentary, actually.
Hmm.
I'm assuming it's a different commentary than the regular movie has, since they have to. They actually talk about some of the scenes that were not in the original movie. So I'm assuming it's different.
Yes, what we're seeing here is about 40 minutes into the original movie, 41 minutes, we're seeing the Naquadah mines.
Yep. And it looks like it's just a giant tent from the distance when they get up close.
Yeah, lots of people.
And you know, a lot of these people are actually Mexicans.
Really?
That's what the commentary mentioned, that they actually took a lot of... Oh, there's Scar yelling at, people. No, the commentary, they said they actually hired a lot of people around Phoenix and everything, a lot of Mexicans, to play the Egyptians. which to me is kind of strange, but, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, coming back faintly to the movie and to a scene that I had issues with and that I'll probably drop some audio in of, Jackson cannot understand the language, and then he has a 30-second conversation with, help me out, the wife? Or the girl who he marries?
Sheree.
Sheree. He has a 30-second conversation with Sheree, and bang, suddenly he's fluent. And it's like, It didn't actually bother me, because I saw this movie in the cinema when it came out. Being a good geek, it looked science fiction-y, so I went to see it. The advantage is, see, when I was about 18, 19, they built a very large shopping center roughly half a mile away from my house with a 12-screen cinema in it. Which meant I no longer had to actually get a sort of hour-long bus journey into town. I could walk to the cinema in 10 minutes.
Well, in here I have probably five of them within 3 or 4 miles. Ryan.
Not half a mile, though.
Half a mile away, I have a cheap theater I can pay $3.50 to see a movie 3 or 4 months after it first came out.
Sorry, folks, that was me. That was me getting a text message.
Oh, look. The Eye of Ra. First, they notice the pendant that Daniel's wearing.
Did you notice a certain similarity? Now, again, this isn't giving much away. I'm coming back into something faintly on topic. But did you notice a certain similarity, both in face, voice, and general sort of approach, to the guy who plays Sharae's father and Master Braytek? And I noticed they never had a scene together.
Well, they are two different actors, of course.
They are two different actors, but there is a definite similarity between them.
Well, there's also differences, too.
Yes, I know that. But I'm wondering, was the character of Master Braytek selected along the lines of the guy who plays Sherry's father?
That could be. But I think they look similar, but they act a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they picked Braytek because he had a similarity to the other guy, but the personality is different, obviously.
How long? This is something you should be able to tell me. The movie came out in 1994?
Yes. I was 14.
When did the series start? I won't tell you what age it was.
If it ended last year, and it was 10 seasons, wasn't it? 97? Let me pull out my season 1 here. Or at least that's what my season 1 says.
That's fair enough. Did DVDs exist in 97? I don't think they did.
Yeah?
Well, I think
they weren't widespread.
I think DVD players were like $800.
I think DVDs in 97 were pretty much like HD DVDs and Blu-ray drives right now.
No, I wouldn't even say they were that widespread. I didn't get my first DVD player until about 1999, maybe 2000. I'll tell you, actually, this might cite it for you. This is just and this is something, actually, I will leave this in because it's an interesting point. DVD, and specifically TV series on DVD, I think has led to an explosion in podcasting about TV series. Because it's led to an accessibility. You can just grab a disc and pop it in.
Well, if someone wanted...
Put audio clips off it.
Well, if someone wanted to do a show about a TV series, before DVDs, or before they came out on DVDs, it would be harder because you'd have to rely on memory. Now you can go back.
Or videotape. You had videotape. I'm sorry. I know you're young, Scott, but there was this. Us creaky ancients did have pre-recorded TV shows on things called videotape.
Well, I know that, but it wasn't every TV show that was out there. There are still a lot of TV shows that aren't even on video or VHS right now, but they are working on getting them on DVD. That's what I'm trying to say. There's more TV shows now that are released on home video or DVD than they were in the past, and without them, you'd have to rely on your memory as opposed to just watching it before you record.
Or in as the case as what we're doing now, is watching it while we record.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, is it picking up the faint background music? Because I have it quite low.
Well, I hear it. I hear Scara.
That wasn't Scara. That was, I've lowered it completely now. The volume's at 4.
Oh.
They're actually revealing, in the scene I'm currently watching, they're revealing the Eye of Ra, the big
yes.
one.
Yes. Well, I saw that a little while ago. Pretty much, they see Daniel Jackson's pendant that he's wearing with the Eye of Ra.
And they assume he's sort of either Ra himself.
Or sent by Ra.
Chances are Ra hasn't visited since before any of these people were born.
Yeah, and then they uncover the eye and they all bow.
There's actually quite a touching scene. It's a funny scene. If this is a vidcast, I'd include the actual scene. There's no point in dropping the audio in because it doesn't make any sense if you can't see it. But there's a scene with Scara. There's an implication here that Scara is actually Sharae's brother.
Actually, he is. You actually find that out in this. I think Children of the Gods. But I'm jumping ahead here and giving kind of a spoiler, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, because, I thought the older guy, what's Shara's father's name? Character name?
I don't remember.
I thought the older guy was calling him son in a sort of generic, as in, I'm the patriarch type gesture.
No, they are related.
Because I never copped it in the TV series, and I just only when rewatching the movie, I'm like, he called him son. He said, oh, it's not his dad. Oh, brother-in-law, right? Okay. Okay, because Daniel ends up, although he doesn't realize it, being married to Sharae. Sharae's basically offered to him, and as far as these people are concerned, that's marriage.
Mm-hmm.
They're now being offered. There's a banquet, but it is a touching scene.
Tastes like chicken.
Kurt Russell. No, not that kind of touching. Scott, honestly.
No.
Kurt Russell.
I was referring to that creature.
Kurt Russell gives Scara his Zippo. Or a Zippo, anyway. And Scara sort of flicks the lighter open. And you know, all his little friends are kind of gathered around, and he spins the flint wheel. And sort of flame pops up and everyone kind of jumps backwards. There's always the... I just knew as soon as he was introduced. I mean, in fairness, I haven't actually watched this movie right through until I sat down to watch it for this recording. And I knew the guy who sticks his hand into the flame and gets burnt, I thought, he's dead. He's the comic relief. He's the funny, stupid one, so... In terms of manipulating the audience's emotion, they're going to kill him. And sorry?
What were you going to say?
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, for all intents and purposes, you considered him kind of a red shirt.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's a geek clothing store. I don't recall the URL, and I'm not going to... I might stick it in the show notes, but... One of their items is a Star Trek red shirt with the word expendable written across the front of it.
It sounds like Think Geek.
Yeah, it's Think Geek. Thank you. The issue I have with Think Geek is they insist on shipping everything by either DHL or... What's the other one, UPS?
I got some things through the post office.
Yeah, well, they insist on shipping everything international. They don't want non-continental U.S. orders. They insist on shipping everything. Yeah, this is a brief off-topic rant, but they have some really cool geek stuff, but their shipping fee is like, for a $30 shirt, they have a shipping fee of $50.
Yeah.
to Europe, and I'm kind of going, nope. I'll buy it when I'm over there, or I'll have American friends of mine. I wouldn't actually mind the expendable shirt. That'd be nice.
You might be able to find it somewhere else.
Maybe this time.
Unless, of course, they make it themselves.
I could probably find that on eBay. God knows you can find anything on eBay. You used to be able to find kidneys on eBay. But to come back to the movie, as we're sort of hopping in and out here, Daniel rejects Sharae, but he takes her in. Sort of, he realizes that if she goes away, then she's kind of shamed in the village, etc. So you wouldn't know, these are primitive people. He starts to realize perhaps if he sends her away, she might be sort of taken off and killed or something. But yeah, that kid, and he dies in a kind of bloodless fashion. There's a basically the ships, which do look cool. Those they're named in the series as Death Gliders, aren't they?
In the series, yeah. In this one, I don't even think they have a name.
No, they don't have a name. But they have a larger version of the staff weapons that the guards carry.
Well, I think in the TV series, the equivalent would be the larger ones that are on the tripod.
Mm-hmm. Or on the... you get them integrated into those turret guns as well.
Actually, I think there's even a... an arm-mounted one that I remember seeing Teal'c have one time. But we're getting far ahead of ourselves again.
Yes. Teal'c is not to be mentioned until episode 1.
You can go ahead and remove all that.
But I'll see. I'm going to have to do some serious...
Oh, look. It's one of the... It's Ra's true form. He looks humanoid. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute.
In fairness now, I did have a criticism, but it is actually, in fairness, for most of the movie, until he actually dies, which they don't see, it's just his eyes that glow. The idea, I don't know, we have a little technical issue there, folks. Maybe MGM are upset. But the idea that I was expounding upon, I'm not sure if you caught it, Scott, that...
I didn't. The last thing I had said that the weapons could be beaten, or the weapons could actually be used to beat someone. That's the last thing I said, and then after that, I heard nothing but static from you.
I see.
And then the call dropped.
So Gizmo, not from my end. Gizmo, not the all-singing, all-dancing thing that we thought it was. Sorry, Gizmo. My point was that being beat about the head is just as lethal. And you can die, basically, subdural hematoma will still kill you as easily as blasting a hole in your chest. It just takes a little longer.
Well, you know, I mean, what I mean by that is you could use the weapon to trip someone. You could use it to just, you know, slam them in the chest, you know, things like that. Not necessarily anything lethal, but it just could be used to disable someone.
I did like the subtleties, because as Stephen King said in Dance Macabre, the monster of your imagination is far, far worse than the monster that's revealed. It actually worked, if I can cross-comparison sci-fi a bit here. It's why the creature in the movie Alien isn't actually revealed until about 20 minutes before the end.
Mm.
Because the whole point, the whole plot and suspense idea is that what you can't see and what you can imagine it is far worse than what it actually looks like. Which is why those scenes where Kowalski and the others are ambushed towards the... Not Kowalski, actually. Kowalski goes with... this is a screw-up on my part. Kowalski actually goes with Daniel and O'Neill, doesn't he? Kowalski doesn't stay back at base. The people who stay back at base, who are ambushed by Ra's Horus guards,
mm-hmm.
You don't actually see the guards initially. You just see flitting shadows, and then you see sort of an arm grabbing these people and sort of yanking mm-hmm. them out of frame.
Which I think is kind of funny, because earlier in the extended version, the special edition or ultimate edition or whatever it is I have,
mm-hmm.
I've already forgotten. You see, they actually, when they're describing what Ra is, it actually shows a small clip of Ra coming out of a sarcophagus or whatever. Just not Ra himself, but the symbiote.
Hmm.
And at the beginning of the movie, it shows the kid who becomes Ra actually walking up to the spacecraft as well, before you even see the scene in Giza.
But you do see the kid walking up to the spacecraft as Daniel is reading, but aren't they ambushed before Daniel learns to speak the language?
Well, you're right. But what I'm saying, though, is you see some of those... you see the kid walking up to the spacecraft before even you see the opening scene of Giza.
Oh.
So...
Okay.
The Ultimate Edition is a little different.
I haven't seen that version. So I can't actually comment. I mean, we could launch into a sub-discussion on differences between the Ultimate Edition and the Standard Edition. I just have the Standard Edition.
Well, I mean, I'd have to get a hold of the Standard Edition and... Yeah.
No, screw that.
Because it's been a while since I've seen anything about this version.
We'll just blather on randomly and I'll sort of edit out bits.
That's kind of what we do anyway.
Yeah, well, we might actually persuade people to listen to this particular blathering. Stranger things have happened.
But going back to the staff weapons, anyway,
mm-hmm.
What interested me is right before they shoot, the thing opens up.
Yeah.
And that is what interested me. When I first saw that before they shot it, that's when it occurred to me, wait a minute, this isn't just a staff.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure what it was going to do at that time, but, you know, it just...
It's something that's certainly not even mentioned in the movie, and while I can understand how it might work on the larger ones, and it's something I think it might be explored in a TV series, and I can understand it now, but purely from a movie standpoint, there's no obvious power source on those weapons.
In the TV series, it is explained.
Yes, but we're not in the TV series yet, and so
you did say that you're not sure if in the TV series, but I was confirming that it does. I wasn't going to give any spoilers about it, though.
Mm-hmm.
But it... I mean, take a look at just about any advanced technology. You could... I'm quoting someone now. You know, I'm not quoting, but paraphrasing. It's indistinguishable from magic. So, I mean, they're...
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
Of course. But what I'm saying is...
It's Arthur C. Clarke, by the way, folks.
Yeah. They weren't going to actually go out and tell you how it's powered. They're just going to make you wonder. So pretty much we're, you know, thinking, ooh, this is so much more advanced, you know, just like these people think that it's, you know, gods.
Well, I mean, these people, it's a stages of advancement thing, I mean. And it's interesting the way they show it, because they show the kids being amazed at the Zippo lighter.
Uh-huh.
And like, oh God, you guys are so much more blah than us. And then the horse guards come along and just basically wipe the floor with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're seeing a stage of technology far in advancement of their own. It's something that really surprised me. It's not actually done in the movie either, and I can't get this. And maybe it's years of playing games like Doom and the like, but or more particularly, actually Half-Life. What was the spin-off to Half-Life? Was it Counter-Strike?
I don't remember.
There was an expansion pack, but basically, okay, they shoot the Serpent Guards with their sort of, you know, projectile weapons. I'm sorry, but surely a staff weapon is better at this because it's designed to kill Serpent Guards? I mean, these guys fight, and pretty much anything else. I mean, hang on. I have bullets, or I have this thing which fires effectively an explosive energy projectile. I want the staff weapon. Admittedly, I suppose from a military standpoint, it's untested. You're not sure how it works, and you don't know how many shots it has in it. You're assuming logically and strategically that it may only fire sort of a limited number of times, whereas you know how your own ammo works and you know how many shots you've got. So strategically, in a battle situation, you're probably better off hanging on to the gun that you know than trusting technology you don't understand.
Well, I would say that I would prefer the weapon that I was trained on as opposed to the other weapon that may or may not work against those guards. They may have some kind of hidden defense that it wouldn't work on them, like some kind of armor that would actually dissipate the weapon. Or, you know, but bullets are something that they haven't not gone against, so there's a pretty good chance that it might do something. That's my logic to it. And you're quiet.
Yeah, sorry. I was waiting to stop talking. I didn't want to interrupt you. I mean, what's wrong with a little dead air? You were trying to interrupt me while I was in mid-rant.
I was going to say, you're always interrupting me, and I'm always interrupting you. What made you change?
I picked up my toy, I admit. Sorry, folks, I got a new ebook. I've been playing with it. I will not mention the brand or the actual sort of model number of it, but it's hard to put. I'm going to close it now and put it up on a high shelf.
Yeah, he's been playing with it for the past like 2 days.
Not 2 days. I only plugged it into power at like 5 o'clock yesterday evening.
Well, okay, you've been playing with it about 24 hours. But anyway.
28. it's a thing. It's a technology. I suppose, obviously, none of these soldiers are geeks. Because your geek or your gameplay would pick up the staff weapon purely to sort of go, ooh, this looks cool.
Actually, there is one that might be a geek, and he was played by the same guy who was in Third Rock from the Sun. I can't remember his character's names or even the actor's name. But earlier he actually says, it doesn't work that way. If we dial it up wrong, we could rematerialize inside of a sun. It doesn't work that way. So he kind of sounded a little geeky.
Didn't he get killed by the Horus guards? Wasn't he back at base?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, technologically speaking, and I really wish we had John Hook here because he's ex-military as far as I know. Is it true that radio won't work in a sandstorm? Do you get sort of a... I'm wondering... Now, I can actually see the... this is the geeky breakdown bits. I mean, I'm thinking from a physics standpoint...
Well, it might depend on the content of the sand, though.
It might depend on the content of the sand, but I think it's more sort of disturbances in the ionosphere.
Yeah, that could be, too.
And, like, in a sandstorm, you have a lot of electrical activity. Which could interfere, because fundamentally shortwave works over a long distance because you're basically bouncing a radio signal off the ionosphere. Trust me, there's a friend of mine who lives near me who used to transmit ice charts to a boat that was navigating the McClintocks.
Take a look at some other movies and TV series, or even the Stargate series. It's only the same in this movie. The other movies, it seems that it works anywhere. I mean, it.
Well, maybe because Stargate, I think, is... I mean, the guys behind Stargate, what's his name? Is it Brad Marshall?
Actually, no, it was Brad something. But yeah, actually, the people that are doing the movie are different from the people that do the TV series. Brad Wright. I don't know. The people that did both of them are completely different.
I thought it was the same creative team, though.
No, it's two different people.
I admit the DeLuise brothers were involved. I mean, isn't that one of the DeLuise brothers back at the start in Creek Mountain, as they call it?
I don't remember.
The guy who's actually sort of I think he plays. I'm going to spin ahead briefly. It's just a single name from the TV series, and I haven't seen the episode. It won't make any difference here, but I think he plays Urgo.
Urgo?
Yeah. You remember Urgo?
Now,
don't give circumstances or any of the description of the episode either. Remember Urgo or you don't. I think it's the same guy.
I'm trying to remember the actor.
The actor, I think. No, the actor is Don DeLuise.
That's right, yeah.
And I think, is he not in Stargate Command at the beginning of the movie?
This one, I don't think so.
He might be.
You're thinking Richard Kind.
Richard Kind. He was in the series as well in a completely different role.
Actually, he was in the series and on, I think, both series. In one character or other, I think. Let me see. The creator.
Yes, we're looking stuff up, folks. We'd like to play you some hold music while this is going on, but frankly, we can't be bothered digging any out.
No, you can just go ahead and edit this.
Here's some laughter instead.
Subtitles on my movie. Okay. Evelyn and Roland Emmerich did the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the TV series, give it a second. Jonathan Glasner and Brad Wright.
Brad Wright.
So it's two totally different people.
Okay, okay. But a lot of the same actors, but we'll discuss that in episode one.
Yeah. Well, even, I just think it's funny that, never mind, we'll talk about it in episode one.
Mm-hmm. I think I know we haven't been recording a huge amount. We did get a chunk of material earlier there. Or you wanted to start this bit again from now. I was just thinking, okay, the sarcophagus.
Oh, yes.
Does the sarcophagus and the whole idea of the sarcophagus technology, the kind of phrase, jump the shark?
Well, you didn't coin that phrase. It was already coined. But anyway.
No, to coin the phrase. I'm not coining a phrase. I'm simply using it.
I know. Just messing with you.
Is the sarcophagus a jump the shark moment? Is it a convenient way of getting you out of the plot hole that you painted yourself into the corner for?
I wouldn't say so because, well, they might have used it in that context, but I think they might have originally come up with it to have actually kept Ra alive for 10,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was originally just like a life extension device or maybe even a stasis device, but then they changed it possibly midway through the movie as a repair device.
Although Ra does actually say, I mean, after Daniel is killed.
Yeah. By a staff weapon. You know, someone should go through and find out how many times he's killed in the TV series and movies.
Oh, gosh.
Edit that part out.
No, that's fine. That's not a huge spoiler.
Would it be kind of funny?
We can do a special like at the end of series one and see how many ways we have of bringing people back to life.
Yeah. Hey, we could even include some of the other races that have come, or the people that have come back.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, or we can discuss races as they're introduced. This is just us planning in front of you folks, and this won't be edited out, because frankly I can't be bothered.
You're just lazy.
I'm not lazy, I'm energy efficient. Yes, the sort of reason why you people are listening to us and sort of thinking, are these guys actually going to discuss Stargate, or are they just going to babble randomly? The thing is, folks, we do both.
See, this is the Babblecast.
Yes. No, the Babblecast is a little too close to Babylon 5cast, and there's one of those in Farpoint Media already. If we want Farpoint Media to eat us, we need to be careful we don't tread on the toes.
Well, we could also just call this the Babblecast SG-1. Anyway.
Yeah,
We've already got a name, people.
I know I've said this at least 15 times already. We will become more professional as we become more focused. And as we go through
that
this...
that doesn't mean we're not going to be goofy.
You can be goofy. I'll be Pluto.
All right, smart aleck. Yeah, you see, at least I'm a planet.
Goofy is not a planet. Oh,
you
that's something... That's something else I do intend to do. And this will be unique to the Gatecast, but we will give you, for every episode, an Indeed count. We will carefully enumerate the number of times Teok says Indeed in every episode, and we will give it to you in the show notes.
I don't know why. I'll let you be in charge of that.
Hey, I'm anal enough to do it.
Yeah, okay.
So, at what point did you, okay, they reveal it to us, but wasn't it a bit classic Daniel sense of, what are you doing with that device? Is Daniel really that naive? In relation to the bomb.
Well, I was. No.
I mean, can we believe that this guy is so steeped in academia and sort of in such an ivory high tower that he doesn't cop the fact that the military isn't going to view the Stargate and the idea of people wandering in from other planets as anything other than a threat?
Well, I think he's intelligent enough to know that, and I think it was more of a rhetorical question.
I don't think it was rhetorical. I don't think it was rhetorical when Daniel asked it. Daniel was, "Are you rolling dice?"
No. I'm using a Tootsie Roll Pop as a top.
Please try and focus.
I am. Mostly. You can edit that part out, though.
Why am I doing that?
Least edit out all the parts where I'm saying edit this out, edit that out.
As you can see, folks, we're having fun, even if we're not actually making an awful lot of coherent sense. What about Daniel's sudden discovery of the symbol for Abydos?
What about it? How he pulls it out of nowhere and he goes, "Oh, there it is."
Yeah, isn't it like, "May the plot be with you"?
I've never heard that, but I like it.
You haven't heard that, no?
Well, I think they were going to try to have this big, elaborate thing, and then it just kind of fizzled, and they just said, throw it in there.
Like, and I know we've mentioned this before, the whole language thing.
Yeah, that probably was another.
That's very definitely it's something that's often used to explain things which are unusual or strange or just seem to drop in, which is
speaking
the plot,
of
the plot
finding
with
the symbol.
Him.
Yeah, but speaking of finding the symbol,
mm-hmm.
That's just what's playing on mine. He just found the ninth symbol.
Nine. Okay, yes, what are you smoking? Can I have some?
See, I can understand eight symbols, but nine? No, there's no nine.
You can understand eight symbols. No, I'm sorry, we'll get on to eight symbols
when we hit that third point season?
I think so, yeah. Right, okay, so we'll be discussing the eighth symbol in 2011 or so.
Unless we can actually find a way to record, quicker.
Maybe next year. I mean, I might go weekly next year. Because I want that. No, I won't actually be studying. Well, my weekend is taken up with college work, folks. And
yeah, I bet
full time. And I mean, the reason, by the way, this is not Scott at all. The reason we won't be releasing weekly is entirely me. I don't have time to do a weekly podcast. I admire people that do. Shout out to Aaron. But I really don't have that sort of time. So what did you think of the appearance of Ra? Did he seem suitably threatening or just like an indulgent child?
He seems like some kind of little feminine, I'm going to get you.
I'm wondering, were they going for sort of 10,000 years old, no hint of anything sort of sexual? Were they going for androgynous?
I'm not sure, because he's obviously male, but some of his actions seemed feminine.
Are they sort of thinking of the race in question, which have not been named in the movie, so we'll name them when we discuss the TV series. But have the race in question. And it's not called. You refer to it as a symbiote. Daniel referred to it more accurately. A symbiote lives in conjunction with its host.
Okay, yes, it's a parasite.
Well, although actually Daniel is wrong, because a parasitical organism kills its host.
Mm-hmm.
In the strictest sense of definition, It is a symbiote because it enhances and extends the life of its host.
Mm-hmm.
So from a dictionary perspective, it is a symbiote.
But it's technically not one because it takes over.
Well, a parasite kills the host.
Well, there is... You're right. Well, you're right about that because there is one parasite that actually takes over grasshoppers and actually eats them from the inside out and takes over their brain.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a body. So they're kind of like little ghoul bugs. But anyway, you can edit that. But anyway,
I'm editing that. I'm not mentioning the G word until we actually get to it.
But anyway, they're kind of like little robotic bugs. The parasite actually makes them jump into pools of water where the bug. Where the, you know, the grasshopper actually drowns.
Where the larva.
And yeah, exactly. So it's.
So we're seeing a certain degree of parallelism.
So it's kind of somewhere between the symbiote and the parasite.
The designs of the movie sort of. Well, yeah, except the symbiote in this doesn't actually attempt to cause the host to kill itself.
But nothing of the host survived. Anyway. Another reference, sorry.
Season 6 did. If memory serves, memory usually does.
Something like that, anyway.
I think. It's very Hollywood in that it ends with a large explosion.
Yeah, and it's a two-dimensional explosion as well. That's also very Hollywood.
Oh, you mean the expanding ring of debris as opposed to an expanding sphere of debris?
Oh, speaking of weapons like we were earlier.
Yes.
The whole hand weapon thingy.
Oh, the rings and the whole sort of...
that glove thingy.
The glove ring thing, the hand weapon. I like the fact that it's dual purpose. You've got your basic sort of force field generator thing. Which flings the unfortunate guard across the room.
Mm.
And then you've got the whole, let's just fry your brain thing.
Yep. But what bothers me, though, is when Ra is using it, you actually see kind of the symbiote appearing through his forehead.
No,
it kind of superimposed it a little bit.
Did you see it through his forehead? I know you saw the eyes glowing.
Well, no, they kind of superimposed the eye area onto Ra's face.
Because I thought I just saw the eyes glowing.
Well, you do, but it's just when he was using it, I guess they did that to kind of show that, you know, the symbiote was inside with a fist or something, you know. That's how I figure it. And what gets me is the whole bomb thing at the end. Can't turn it off. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Now, hang on a second. Did we actually sit down and time that?
No.
Because this is what gets me, and it's got me in other movies, like Point Break. But it's like there are like 120 seconds left. And didn't they battle that Horace guard for like 5 minutes?
Something like that.
Come on, that was not that bad. I was sitting there because I was rewatching the movie last week and I kind of got, oh, come on, the bomb would have gone off like 6 times by now.
Well, I have some logic for you. It could, since they're jumping from one scene to the next, they could be taking place at the same time.
No, they're not. No, this is the scene with the bomb and them and the guard.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm saying, though, is... I mean, the whole attack on the guards with the couple hundred extras...
No, not that. This is the scene with O'Neill, Daniel, and the guard. And the bomb.
Yeah, but after that, O'Neill takes the detonator thingy out of the bomb, and the bomb's still ticking down.
And yeah, and like, we're at 120 seconds there. And the point is, even if you... I thought I had it here, and I don't.
Maybe you don't have the same thing I do, because shortly after he takes the detonator out and he can't stop it, it switches to a scene where every single person on that planet attacks the Horus Guard, and then Ross starts taking off.
Okay, what I'm doing, folks...
We have dead air now. Woohoo. You'd think since O'Neill put the bomb together, he can actually take it apart and, you know...
He didn't really put it together. He just put the components together.
That's what I meant. You'd think that he'd be able to take it apart and, you know, take out the plutonium or whatever, you know, even though it, you know, give him radiation poisoning.
I think that was pretty much just the mechanical set construction.
Oh, are you trying to say that once the timer is activated, the bomb can't be taken apart into its individual pieces again? Which is entirely possible. Could have some kind of locking mechanism that locks it.
Okay. I'm watching the scene with, and it's 1 minute and 52 seconds, okay? And I'm at 1 hour 47 and 40 seconds when it's at 1 minute and 52 seconds. At 1 minute 42, which means the bomb should go off at roughly 1 hour, but he's just taken the timer off and it's 1:35. Okay? So this bomb should go off at, according to my... Okay, it's switched outside.
And you're there's a little battle scene.
No, this is where his... oh, yeah, then we have
on my DVD, it's a battle scene between the people and the Jaffas.
Yeah, the people have just appeared.
Horus Guard.
Yeah, Jaffa and don't exist.
A whole revolt.
Yeah, but hundreds of people...
Overrunning four guards.
Now, I got a question about this scene. There's hundreds of people standing on the sand ridge. They're still facing the prisoners. Why don't you just turn around and slaughter the prisoners? Why fire the crowd that's attacking them that they know is going to kill them? Why not just slaughter the prisoners anyway? I would. I mean, I'm going now. I'm taking these with me.
Well, you're gonna have to bleep yourself because you don't want to.
Yeah, I know that.
Or just go superimpose the word screw over, you know.
Yeah, the old guy with the pointy stick up against staff weapons.
Yeah. And then
this is Ra preparing to leave. And some of this has to be happening while the bomb is ticking down.
It has to. It has to be taking place at the same time, otherwise it really wouldn't work.
We've gone like 3 minutes now. Since the bomb had 1 minute and 35 seconds to go. 3 minutes of screen time. Admittedly, we haven't been back inside.
I mean, come on, it's Hollywood, though.
Yeah, but it's a science fiction movie. They know geeks are going to be watching. Okay, what are we at now?
I don't know.
We're at, let's see. O'Neill is discussing it, so we're definitely talking actual time. 40 seconds. Okay, we got the eyes, and then we've got the thing superimposing the face.
See? Now you see what I mean.
Yeah, but only as the bomb goes off.
I had that earlier when he was doing the hand thingy to Daniel. So,
Let's have a look at the hand thingy to Daniel if we can find it.
Oh, you're going to go back and look now, huh?
You know what
it is? This shows you how unorganized we are, people.
Yes, we're flicking randomly through the movie.
I'm at the closing credits right now.
That's him kissing Sheree. I need to see him where he's back up in the spaceship. Yeah, because basically Ra comes along and says, "You no longer amuse me."
That was about 5 minutes before the bomb scene. What the heck? The sound that came over the thing was like...
Yeah, it was a Horus Guard.
I know, but it's just... When it came over Gizmo, it didn't sound like it was supposed to. It sounded kind of funny.
I've closed it. I'm not going to find that scene. It should.
Hold on.
I can faintly hear a story. Folks, what you're hearing in the background faintly is the Stargate music as Scott, as we flick disorganizedly through the movie. I assure you, when I sit down and watch Children of the Gods during the week, I will be taking notes. But a lot of our first episode discussion isn't going to be covering the first episode per se, because the first episode you can take is read. What we're probably going to be discussing, because we're approaching wrap-up at this point, I've got about, even allowing for editing and bad sort of off-topic stuff, a lot of which I might leave in, swearing aside. We're running up to, we've got about 2 hours of recorded material, I think, or the close to 2 hours of recording material, and I'm going to chop that down to about an hour.
Yeah, hopefully you take out all the, you know, parts of us being goofy.
No, I got to leave some goofiness in. We are goofy. Well, you're goofy. I'm an Edward Kuiperbelt object.
Anyway.
Oh, I think I'll end over the swear words with that.
No.
Well, that's not bad. In an hour and a half of actual real time, we've recorded 45 minutes of material. About 20 minutes of which is probably usable.
Probably about right.
I'm going to... Okay, folks, look, thanks for listening. This is Alan in Ballina, the west of Ireland.
And this is Scott in Tucson, Arizona.
Signing off.
Thank you for listening, and sorry for being...
So completely random, we assure you that things will improve in the upcoming weeks, months, and given the sheer number of Stargate episodes, years ahead.
Yeah, what he said.
And it's goodbye for me.
And goodbye for me.